Welcome to Off Script with Dan Dwyer on Robinhood Radio, featuring in-depth interviews with guests from the world of theater and allied arts. Underwriting support from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. And now, here's the host of Off Script, Dan Dwyer.
Well, thank you, Marshall, and welcome to Off Script. Being a humorist writer is a special form of writing, but being a lyricist for a musical comedy is a very special form of humor writing. And my guest today can talk firsthand how we cross the bridge between books and magazine humor and musical theater. My guest is David Camp, who, incidentally, with his family, has been a part-time resident of Lakeville, Connecticut for many years, is best-selling author of The United States of Arugula, plus contributor of loads of celebrity and performing artist profiles in Vanity Fair. But now he's the co-lyricist with actor John Leguizamo in Leguizamo's new musical comedy, Kiss My Aztec, which just had its world premiere to enthusiastic reviews at Berkeley Rep in Berkeley, California, and now on its way to La Jolla Playhouse, and maybe on its way to the Big White Way. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Dan. Nice to be here.
Good to welcome back to Robinhood Radio.
Right. I used to do a New York Giants show with Peter Richmond of Millerton, New York here.
I saw that when I came in. I obviously am a theater queen, so what would I know about the New York Giants?
I'm a polymath. I can do it all.
Well, you there know? You go. So now you're writing for musical theater after a really, really great career in doing all the other stuff I talked about. And I know you didn't get in, you know, I know the musical didn't, you know, Kiss My Aztec didn't happen overnight. You've been working on it for a long time. But before we talk about all of that, John Leguizamo, a great stand-up comedian, done movies, television, all the rest of it, was nominated for a Tony Award a couple of years ago on Broadway for the Latin History for Morons. But just set up for us, if you would, what Kiss Me Aztec is all about.
Kiss My Aztec.
Oh, Kiss, what did
kiss,
I say?
Kiss, you said Kiss Me Aztec.
Okay.
You went a little cockney there.
Well, it sounds like Kiss Me Kate.
Blimey, Kiss Me Aztec.
It sounds like Kiss Me Kate.
Kiss My Aztec, and it has an exclamation point, like hell's a poppin'.
Okay, well, there you go.
Kiss My Aztec is a silly, fun comedy, also a period piece. It's set in the Aztec Empire in the 1500s, at the time when the Spanish conquest led by Cortez had already happened. And the idea is to take this historical period and sort of transpose it to the present day. So you have, you know, actors, there's elements of modern music and even some hip hop and salsa in there. But the dialogue is this funny mashup of John Leguizamo type New York urban slang and Elizabethan dialect. And it actually sounds really musical, the dialogue by itself.
And it sounds like it's also going to challenge all our jingoistic images from all of those civic-oriented history books
right.
from grammar school.
I mean, one of the things that's sort of floating in popular discourse nowadays is that, you know, the American history that you and I were raised on, Dan, is not the – it was a sort of sanitized version of American history written by the victors. And we now know that, you know, there's a sad history of exploitation and colonialism. But one thing about this show is that we don't tell that story with solemnity or in a lecturing tone. We make those points, but through fun musical comedy.
So John Leguizamo wrote the book,
mm-hmm.
okay, and you just wrote the lyrics to the songs.
Yeah, the backstory, just to make that clear, is John had written this as a play. For, you know, his bread and butter is the one-man show where mm-hmm. he does multiple voices and characters. But this was something he wrote for the first time, not for himself to perform in. He wrote it as a play, but then he decided, hey, this feels like it should become a musical. It should have songs in it. And so he hired a young composer named Benjamin Velez to write the music. And John and I had been friends for 15 years or something. He knew I was a print humorist, and he knew that I'd ached to write song lyrics. And he filed that away and then approached me in late 2014 and said, David, do you want to try being a lyricist for this show? And I said, oh, my God, yes.
So before we talk about what the difference is between writing lyrics for a song and writing humor for an essay, let's mm-hmm. say, how would you characterize the humor in Kiss My Aztec? Is it satire? Is it farce? Is it slapstick?
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay.
All of the above. It's kind of bawdy. Like, we went with that Elizabethan idea that you know, it's like if you're doing a comedy of errors or something like that, where you're going to have a lot of slapstick. slapstick and farce, but you're also going to have a lot of wordplay. So it's sort of satirical and incisively and trenchantly so, but there's also some real like vaudevillian humor in it.
Right.
Right.
Okay. So as a – can I call you, let's say for the sake of this question, a humor essayist?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
So if you're a humor essayist, you're sitting down and writing with a thematic theme, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A humorous theme. Okay. Mm-hmm. In this case, the theme's already been set.
Right.
The story's already been set. So how do you put your head on the same page or in the same wavelength as the author who's already set the stage?
Well,
do you feel as if – I mean, you don't have the creative imperative anymore – because you pretty much – you get to use a vocabulary, I think, to conform with what's already set. How'd you deal with that?
Well, in some cases, John would actually – John Leguizamo would actually set markers in the script. Like, here I want a song called Dark Meat, okay, which is a song and this gives you an idea of the bawdiness. It's about the Spanish – and you have to remember the Spanish in this –
I'm familiar with the terminology.
Yes. The Spanish in this show are the white people.
Yeah.
And the colonizers and the Aztec are the brown-skinned people. And so this is – there's a moment when the Spanish viceroy's daughter is craving what – or wondering
dark
what
meat.
It must be like. Yes, what
yeah.
it must be like to have a moment with a dark – a quote-unquote dark man. So John would demarcate that and say, okay, make up a song for her to sing in which he's contemplating this. And then there are other moments in the show where they're kind of song deserts where we realize, oh, there's sort of too long a space between songs. Where is there a part that we could turn the book, meaning the script, into a song?
Right.
And so that's how we'd play it.
All right. So let me wonk a little political and serious now.
Okay.
Does the play Kiss My Aztec deal at all with the fact that Hispanic people are always dumped into the colored category then when in fact they're really Caucasian?
Well, Hispanic is an interesting term because I found that a lot of people are now using Latinx because Hispanic is such an imprecise term, and some people say even though they have Spanish blood, like John Leguizamo, they are majority Native American.
Right.
Like John's one-man show, Latin History for Morons, which he's actually touring again this summer, is he talks about this, how like he considers himself more Latino or Latinx, to use the more current term, than he does Hispanic, because we speak Spanish, meaning we being people in the Americas. But if you're brown skinned, you're some mix of Taino and Native American or whatever and indigenous and Afro. There's Afro Latino as well. And if you look at our cast, it's an incredible spectrum of what Latinx or Latino can mean.
In case you're just joining us, you're hearing from David Camp. Besides being a famous humorist essayist and humorist writer and known for his book, The United States of Arugula, he's just finished a gig as co-lyricist for Kiss My Aztec, a new musical comedy by John Leguizamo that's having its premiere at Berkeley Rep and then heading out to La Jolla and maybe to the East. So how does a nice Jewish boy from New Jersey like David Camp come up with a vocabulary and with a lexicon that fits into all of this crazy stuff that this Latinx guy – is that the right thing, Tom?
Well, Latinx is the non-gender specific.
Okay. Well, you are definitely not Latinx.
Yeah, instead of Latino or Latina, you say Latinx.
Okay.
It bears mentioning that the entire cast is – Latinx, black, or some combination thereof. The entire creative team is at least part Latinx with one exception, me.
And that would be you.
That would be me.
Okay.
And the upshot of that is John wanted to cultivate new talent, or underappreciated talent cast-wise. And Benjamin Velez, our young composer, who's actually half Jewish and half Colombian. But he just wanted someone to be a lyricist who he could count on to be funny and who would work well with him. John and I have been friends, and we're kind of roughly the same age. We have similar comic sensibilities and similar timestamp sensibilities. Like he would say, I want – like there's some rap in the show. And he said, like, I want this song to sound a little bit like Slick Rick with Doug E. Fresh.
Yep.
And my composer and collaborator, Benjamin Velez, is only 31. He's like, who are they? And because that's like early 80s hip hop. And like I was kind of the generational translator who could say what John means is. And so John and I have a lot of cultural touch points in common. And that's, I think that's why he trusted me to be the one outlier. I also think that all Broadway bound musical comedies have a quota of at least one Jew.
Yeah, well, that's another whole topic of conversation that I hope we're going to get to about why Jews, and I'm not trying to be stereotypical, you brought it up, have such a profound effect on American comedy. But let's get there maybe later. So what about, I mean, you're a pretty hip guy. Okay, you're
pretty hip. You sound like Paul Schaefer.
Yeah, you've been around the magazine world a lot. But in terms of street speak, did you have to go out and learn vocabulary to work into these songs?
Yes, but one thing I have to go back to is when I say John and I share a similar comic sensibility and cultural set of cultural markers. It's because we both came of age in the late 70s and 1980s when hip-hop was new. And even though John grew up speaking street slang much more regularly than I did, I was absorbing it because I grew up in New Jersey in the orbit of New York when hip hop was being born and in a really diverse melting pot town. So I grew up around early hip hop and picked up the slang, knew the slang. So I can speak readily in this language. What I did have to learn was sort of Spanish pejorative slang, you know, for some of the wisecracks in the songs. And even just, you know, I'm not a fluent Spanish speaker, but there was one moment where I wanted, for example, what's the Spanish term for poor thing? It's pobrecito, which is actually a wonderfully musical word.
Lovely. And it's very lyrical.
It's perfect for the moment in the song that I was writing. Pobrecito, it means poor thing. And so I have had to pick up some Spanish terminology, both regular Spanish and slang.
What about collaborating with a composer? Mm. Because you can sit there, I think, absent music or absent a score and come up with a wonderful word. But if it doesn't fit with what the composer's composed, how do you rationalize that?
Well, it's kind of a learning curve for me because this is the first professional experience I've had writing songs, although I've written songs for, you know, my family's private amusement before. And Benjamin Velez, who's phenomenal. He's a composer, as I said, he's only 31. And he's a lyricist too, so he knows the tricks of the trade. He can do it all. But we really collaborate nicely. And one thing I've learned is that something can look brilliant on the page, and if I was publishing it in Vanity Fair, I'd get away with it. But it doesn't. You can't sing it. Like, words have to be singable. They have to track. And there's a musicality to lyrics that doesn't have to exist in print. So that's been part of the learning curve for me.
Interesting. Okay, so let's get back to the profound effect that Jewish people have had on on comedy in the United States. I mean, George S. Kaufman, okay, for theater. I mean, we can – Mel Blanc's for movie.
Mel Brooks.
Mel Brooks for movies.
Right.
We can go down the list for everybody in the golden age of television. What is it about you people that makes you so funny?
Well, you people?
You people. I know. Wow, okay. I know. Yeah. I'm saying that as an Irish-American from New Bedford, Massachusetts.
Well, I think the answer – Neil Gabler wrote a book called – I forgot what it's called. But he wrote – basically said how the Jews invented Hollywood.
There you go.
And I think that's part of the answer is that Broadway musical theater and burlesque and to some degree Hollywood were largely the inventions of Jewish people of backgrounds not unlike mine, like Eastern European immigrant. Well, I'm not an immigrant, but I'm the grandson of an Eastern European Jewish immigrant. And I think it was just – Neil Gabler's book was called An Empire of Their Own, mm-hmm. How the Jewish People Invented Hollywood. And I think there's some truth to that. It's just it was a common sensibility and some Jewish people who are kind of taking in America, maybe at a slight distance, but also while desperately trying to assimilate. And there's some kind of comic gold to be mined from that little seam between fitting in and being slightly outside. Mm-hmm. And I think it's part of the fun of Mel Brooks. But even more serious, like Rodgers and Hammerstein are Jewish or were Jewish, mm-hmm. even though their names were Americanized. So mm-hmm. it's just a long tradition, I think, because they were there from the start.
Right.
We were there from the start. We people.
You people.
Yes.
You people were there from the start. So this is a stupid, plain, ordinary question. What are your favorite comic movies?
Well, if we're talking about musical comedy,
anything.
I just rewatched it on an airplane. One of those things where nowadays on airplanes you have a menu. You can pick your movie.
Yeah.
And I just thought, I'm Singing in the Rain. Oh, I've seen it a million times, but probably not since I was 20 or something. I watched it. That is a perfect musical comedy.
And
perfect,
I would say The Bandwagon, but that's all right.
But there's no drag. Even like good musical comedies like The Music Man, which I think is almost perfect. There's always a few sappy songs. My White Knight, like I love every song. Meredith Wilson's brilliant, but that one song, My White Knight, I find corny. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, can we fast forward through that one? Singing in the Rain, I think, has no flab, no dead moments. It's great.
What about the Mel Brooks movies?
The Producers is pretty amazing. I love High Anxiety. I just rewatched that one recently too. I mean, they're all good, but I think his peak period was from The Producers through High Anxiety. As of the 1980s, I think they got less good, but you know, he's done so many good things.
So you obviously grew up pre-internet, television, central focus, not before there was cable binging.
Right.
So what were your favorite sitcoms growing up?
Well, I think probably the real classic, like MTM ones, like Mary Tyler Moore.
Right.
Bob Newhart. I mean, that whole CBS lineup of Carol Burnett, it was like Mary Tyler Moore, Bob Newhart, and Carol Burnett. And what's weird, Dan, is that it was all on Saturday night. Now Saturday night's a programming graveyard, but that back then America, everyone stayed home to watch these great Saturday night shows.
It's a social homily. Not just comedy.
Yeah, and then All in the Family was always on Sunday night. Although back then I found that show too shrill because I was a little kid. And I was like, oh, everyone's yelling. Although now I watch it and I see how brilliant it was.
Right.
And I actually loved black sitcoms too. I loved Sanford and Son. I liked What's Happening. I love Flip Wilson's variety show that was on in the early 70s.
What about really, really dark, sinister comedy? Like, did you see this movie? The Death of Stalin?
No, I didn't see
it. Okay, well, people either love it or they hate it. Mm-hmm. It's a perfectly farcical account of the actual revolution and all of that. Anyway, I guess my question is, what makes people funny? I mean, it's a
just
stupid
a small
question,
question,
but I mean, we see people every day, and you're trying to describe someone to a friend, and they say, well, that guy's got a great sense of humor. And then another person you'll simply describe as, he's a real drip. He doesn't have any sense of humor. Why do people have a sense of humor? Why do you have a sense of humor?
The bigger question is, why don't people have a sense of humor?
Because
I'm always amazed when people don't, because kind of my gambit and I'm someone who's drawn himself out of his shell. I'm an inherently shy person who, as an adult, I think it's an adult life skill, like knowing how to drive a car is like knowing how to be socially fluent, when you're at a party or at a dinner or even just, waiting for an airplane, you should be friendly and a good conversationalist. And for me, my way to break through that and break through my shyness is being funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say 90% of the time it works, and 10% of the time you realize, oh, the other person doesn't have a sense of humor. And so I think it's far more rare for someone to not be funny. I think most people have a certain funniness. And a lot of it is, I think, a certain element of surprise that where you would put the normal comment, you might say something that's a non sequitur, or you might just say something that's a little off topic or whatever. And I think that's where humor is really successful, kind of like breaks the ice at parties. It's a cliche, but it's true.
What about the even more serious theory, going back to the Greeks' theory on theater, that comedy is really a disguise for pathos, that everybody's really laughing at the misfortune of the poor son of a bitch who slipped on the banana? Because it's happening to them, not to us. But
yeah,
we know that it could happen to us just as well.
It could. And I think the opening song in our show, In Kiss My Aztec, is a multi-layered song in that regard. It's called White People on Boats. And you open, the curtain goes up, and you see a bunch of people in quasi-Aztec garb. And they've already, remember, the conquest has already happened. And they're saying, this used to be our fertile land, the Aztec Empire, green and grand, until those blanks washed up on our sand, those white people on boats. And they sing this chorus, white people on boats, the end of good times in most tropical climes is white people on boats. And so right away, there's layers to that. Like, it's like there.
Now, can you sing that for us?
I can't because I'm yeah. If Benjamin was here, the composer, he would do it justice. But
it's pretty good lyrically, but though. I like that.
And we repeat. We hammer away at this theme. It's like another one is like. Yeah, the original sin of the country you're in is white people on boats, and so that like in my when, the way I just said it sounds like a lecture, but in the context of the song, it's funny, and there's layers to that. One layer is that these poor people are lamenting their fate in a kind of comic sing-song fashion, when in fact they're talking about something really serious. And the other thing is that a lot of theatergoers, let's face it, the majority of theatergoers are white people, so they're taking this and going, "Whoa, white people on boats," but at the same time. You're in on the joke. One of the nicest compliments that we were paid is by Oscar Eustace, who is the artistic director of the Public Theater.
Yeah.
And he actually, the Public Theater paid for our very first one-week workshop to test out this show early last year. And Oscar said to us, "What I like about your humor is that it's smart, but it also includes the audience, counts on the audience to be smart too." Meaning we're not talking down to the audience. Right. We're saying, you're smart and we're going to collude on our collective intelligence, so you're in on the joke. You're not – that white people on boats is not a j'accuse like you white people. Right. It's like saying, let's face it. It's part of the history of our country.
Speaking of workshop, and if you're getting back to the model, the print model, if you sit and you compose an essay that's funny, you can go back, you edit it, you read it, you say, hey, that's pretty good. I think that's funny. That's what I intended, and it goes out. In terms of writing lyrics for a play or for a musical in this case, you don't really hear it until you hear somebody else – say it. What was it like sitting there for the first time in workshop, listening to your lyrics be spoken by somebody else?
Well, first of all, thrilling as all get out, because it is amazing to have something that's just been internalized in your head, and then suddenly some really amazing actor who's been on Broadway is singing your words. That's just the best feeling in the world. And even more so once it's beyond workshop and they're on a stage. But at the same time, in a workshop scenario, sometimes it's exhilarating and sometimes you're just dying a death in your heart because you realize, oh, this thing that I thought was so clever is not landing
right. For
whatever reason, because I got too clever and tied up the singer in too many knots or the joke doesn't land rhythmically, whatever.
So when do you go back and work that over, or when do you go back and just say, give it up? That's not going to happen.
You never give it up because, you know.
You use it for someplace else.
You use it for someplace else. But the other thing is, you know, as you know, Dan, every musical comedy is a work in progress, even once it's up. Meaning we're up in Berkeley right now. There's a performance happening tonight. But we still know that for the next production, La Jolla, I'm going to be revising songs with Benjamin.
Right.
And after La Jolla, you know, when this show is, we hope, coming to the East Coast, we're going to be revising.
That would be Broadway, maybe.
Broadway, yes. And we think we're on a pretty good path for that, knock on wood. But we know that we're constantly going to be revised because we can always get better. So you're never complacent about it, ever.
In case you're just joining us, my guest is David Camp. Besides being a humor essayist and interviewer for Vanity Fair on many occasions, an author of The United States of Arugula, he is the co-lyricist of a new play, hopefully Broadway Brown, called Kiss My Aztec by John Leguizamo. Let's talk about Vanity Fair a little bit. You've interviewed a lot of famous people, mostly performing artists.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean,
is music your thing?
I would say, yeah, music's probably my main thing. Like,
yeah.
I'm not a hard news reporter generally, so I mean, most of my big stories have been like Sly Stone and Johnny Cash and Bruce Springsteen, and you know, I also do cultural stuff. I've written about the painters Lucian Freud and Norman Rockwell. But
right.
Yeah, I'm an arts guy. But yeah, music is my passion, and this is letting me cross over into my passion, which
is
great.
A whole subject. This could be a whole subject of a whole interview in itself, and we've only got time for one question. So let me just ask, of all the, let's say, musical performers that you've interviewed, what was the most revelatory thing that came out of those interviews for one person that you never would have expected?
Oh, you're putting me on the spot in the last question.
I know. It's not fair.
Gosh. I mean, it's funny because I'm from New Jersey and I've always respected Springsteen. But I've never been a Springsteen worshiper. And I think one thing – so when I was with him, I didn't have that like shaking with nervousness approach that I think a lot of people who do interview him have. And so I was just – I was talking him through the lyrics of Born to Run, mm-hmm. and he'd just written his autobiography. And I said, I think you're writing about your dad, because he'd written a lot in his autobiography about his dad. I said, I think that these lyrics are a proxy for your dad moving to California, which had just happened like 2 years before he wrote the song. And he started thinking about it, saying, no. First he was like, no, I think you're – and then he said, you may be right. And it was this great conversation we ended up having, yeah. where I put Bruce Springsteen on the couch to some extent.
That's what makes a good interviewer. Thank you, David, for joining us. And good luck with Kismayaztek. If we can't get out to La Jolla to see it.
Just wait for it to come east.
Wait till it come to Broadway. Okay. The program's been Off Script. I'm your host, Dan Dwyer. The topic has been Kismayaztek, as I said.
Kismayaztek.
Kismayaztek. What did I keep saying?
Me. Keep You're me. Going
I,
Cockney.
It's Kiss Me Kate. I'm a Broadway queen. I can't get that out of my head. We're talking about Kismayaztek. Co-lyricist David Camp, Lakeville resident with him and his family for many years. Thanks, David, again, and thanks for joining us on Off Script.
Thank you, Dan.
Underwriting support for Off Script with Dan Dwyer from Johnny Cake Books in Salisbury, Connecticut, whose collection of rare collectible and out-of-print books is housed in a 19th century cottage in one of the most old-fashioned small towns in New England. Off Script with Dan Dwyer is also available via podcast on our on-demand page, robinhoodradio.com. Click on On Demand and then click on Off Script with Dan Dwyer.